Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
From KMOX Sports.
Okay, boys, here we go.
Welcome to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line.
Those bit swings, and he hits a drive. He hits a slammer.
Gray Bar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Here we go.
Now, Matt Pauly on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, man, let's get going here.
Here we go. Let's go.
On a Friday evening, we welcome you in. It is time for a Gray Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. Have you till 8 o'clock this evening as we wrap up the week together. We've got a busy, busy show tonight. In about 10 minutes, we'll talk with one of our favorite people, Earl Austin Jr. We'll preview the Billikens basketball season with him and also talk through his great honor that he received earlier this week. Missouri football, they've got the weekend off, but then they are going to go into a mad sprint to the finish, and it's an interesting time to look at the Tigers and kind of assess where they're at going into an off weekend. Eli Hoff from the Post-Dispatch and STL Today is going to join us. We'll talk a little Mizzou basketball with him as well. And then next hour, we've got Kevin Wheeler, our good friend. We'll talk through a bunch of baseball stuff with him, and we'll also hear from Patrick Mahomes next hour, his weekly conversation from 96.5 The Fan in Kansas City. We are going to hear from him coming up in the 7 o'clock hour as well. Let's start with the news of the day. And I wasn't in yesterday. Joe Pott was in. I got the experience of trick-or-treating with my daughter. I was Kyle Sixt is here. Kyle, I won't spend too much time on this. I grew up in a fairly religious household, and we really did not do much Halloween stuff. So I realized when I was like walking around a neighborhood last night with my five-year-old daughter, outside of like going to just a few houses here or there, something, you know, just real close, that was the first time in my entire life I had ever experienced like full-fledged trick-or-treating.
Really?
Yeah. Yes.
You go all out for it. It's no joke. You go and get as much candy as you possibly can. That's the way I did it.
My daughter did well. She nice. Did well. So I got to experience that last night. Maria alluded to this earlier. There's a thing out there, the trick-or-treating potato. And if you do like a Google search for it, you can find that there's like, I guess it almost started as like a social experiment. And now some people give kids the choice, potato or chocolate. And of the group of six or seven kids that my daughter was trick-or-treating last night, of course it was my daughter who chose the potato while all the other kids chose the candy.
That's awesome. She's better than I was as a kid. I'm taking the candy yeah. every single time.
She took the potato. My wife's actually going to cook it up for her tonight.
Nice.
So she's going to eat her trick-or-treating potato this evening. So that was kind of my story from last night. But with that, I wasn't here for the show yesterday. Joe Pott was in. Didn't get to go through the news of the day yesterday, which was not surprising or shocking by any stretch of the mind, that the team did not pick up the options on Keenan Middleton, Lance Lynn, and Kyle Gibson. There'd been some reports out there leading into the decision yesterday that the Cardinals were at least considering picking up the option on Kyle Gibson. I never totally bought into those. I did not. And look, if you've been listening to this show, if you've been watching our roundtables that we've done on online all along, I've been talking about the Cardinals dropping payroll by moving on from Lynn and Gibson. To me, it was always just kind of a foregone conclusion that that was going to happen, and it did officially happen yesterday. So that's Kyle Gibson did a nice job. Lance Lynn did a nice job. Like, neither of those guys were bad this past year, but at the same time, you have to be able to get that level of production from guys that you're not paying $11, $12, $13 million a year. And that's how much you were paying those guys. And I understand why the Cardinals did it. Like, I wasn't upset at those signings last year. I thought the Cardinals offseason last year was fine. I would have liked at the time, I probably would have liked for them to maybe do something more in the bullpen last year. But I also say that we can now sit back and say the acquisition of Keenan Middleton paid out nothing because he never appeared due to injury. Maybe I would have liked them to bring in another outfield bat in the offseason last year, but I didn't think it was like this overwhelming need. We can look back on it now and say, yeah, overwhelming need, considering the offensive production that they did not get and the step back that they got from a Jordan Walker. But in the middle of the offseason, I was fine. I thought the Cardinals did enough last year to contend, and if their offense, if they would have scored more runs, if they would have done better with runners in scoring position, they would have been a playoff team. They didn't, and they weren't, and now we're in the reset. But I was never upset about Kyle Gibson or Lance Lynn being signed. I thought it made a lot of sense for where they were at last year. What makes more sense moving forward is for them to try to develop those type of players, where at the very least, the middle of your roster can be almost entirely filled with homegrown talent. And when it's homegrown, it costs less for a while, and that's where they have to go. And that's part of what they're trying to do with this player development reset. And then today the news came down that they have claimed right-hand pitcher Rodair Munoz off of waivers from the Miami Marlins. Look, his numbers aren't good. I'm not going to sugarcoat this. He made his Major League debut this past year. 18 appearances, 17 starts, 2-7 record, had an ERA that was elevated. Even his numbers at AAA weren't especially good, had an ERA at about 5 or so. Here's the thing with him, and we'll talk more about this with Kevin Wheeler in the 7 o'clock hour. I'll be interested to get his thoughts on Munoz. But you take a flyer on him because he throws hard. And you hope that you can find a way to get him to throw strikes. And you hope that you can maybe look at him and create a pitch mix that other pitches can work off the fastball more effectively, especially if you're able to really take advantage of his velocity, whether that means he stays as a starter or maybe goes to the bullpen to try to create some more velocity that way, whatever you want to do. But it's an interesting pickup, 24 years old. He takes a 40-man roster spot, but certainly no guarantee of a major league job, and he seems like a guy who is likely to start the season in Memphis. Unless something happens, he takes a 40-man roster spot. 40-man roster right now at 36. There's a bunch of guys like Tink Hintz and Tekoa Roby who still need to be protected prior to the Rule 5 draft. We'll see how aggressive the Cardinals are in adding to the 40-man roster to protect players from being selected in the Rule 5 draft. There's no guarantee that, you know, it happens where you claim a guy in the offseason and then you need that 40-man roster spot and you move on from him and somebody else. There's guys who get claimed 2, 3, 4 times in an offseason. That certainly happens on occasion. So there's some upside on Munoz because of his ability to throw hard, but he has certainly not yet been able to put it all together. All right, we'll take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk with our friend Earl Austin Jr. We'll talk with him about the SLU basketball season, which begins on Monday, and also talk to him about his great honor from earlier in the week. That's all coming up. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. I cannot wait until Monday, because Monday right here on KMOX, we are going to hear St. Louis Billikens basketball. They are opening up the season in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. They've got a neutral site game against Santa Clara. And, of course, right here on KMOX, you hear Billikens basketball with Bob Ramsey and Earl Austin Jr. And Earl joins us right now to help preview the season. Earl, really appreciate you taking some time with us. How are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing?
I'm good. First and foremost, congratulations to you because you pick up an amazing honor earlier this week, named as an inductee into the Missouri Sports Hall of Fame. Completely well-deserved. Just another Hall of Fame for you to head into. You're in a few. What did you think? What's it like when you get that call and you find out that you are going into something like that? It's such a cool honor.
It really is. I'm just extremely honored and very blessed to get such recognition. And it's just, you know, something I've always loved to do, you know, talking, writing about sports for a living. That's an honor in itself. But to get that kind of honor bestowed upon you is it's just nothing but a blessing. I just lost the words, and that doesn't happen to me often.
And it's quite the class. You're going in with Anthony Bonner. I'm sure that has to be special for you. There's another KMOX connection because Jim Jackson, Cardinals broadcast engineer. We could go through the entire list, but it's a really cool group of people that are being inducted in the class of 2024.
It really is. AB, a former Billiken, a great NBA for Shine High School. But like you say, Jimmy Jackson, who I sat next to on Billiken broadcast for 3 decades now, I think that's really cool to see Jim become a Hall of Famer. I was really excited when I saw his name on that list.
Yeah, we were too, just to see both those names and not taking anything away from anybody else, but the two KMOX connections with you and Jim, really, really cool. So congratulations, and I think everybody here at KMOX is just so happy that you are on that list. Let's jump into what's going to happen on Monday. Now, have you ever been to that arena in Sioux Falls, South Dakota? They run events there all the time. I've heard cool things about it. Is this going to be a first trip for you, or have you been there before?
No, it's my first time. I believe it's my first time in South Dakota, as a matter of fact. So that's something off the checklist. I know they've had events in the past there, so I'm really looking forward to checking things out, and it should be a very exciting game as well.
Yeah, I've broadcast games at South Dakota and South Dakota State, but I've never gone into that arena in Sioux Falls. And again, I've heard cool things. It's the Field of 68 event that's going to take place, and they're going to match up against Santa Clara. So Santa Clara is a team that historically is pretty darn good. This is a really good test for the Billikens to open up the season.
It really is. It's a great opportunity for both programs to see if they can pick up a quality non-conference victory to start the season. Santa Clara won 20 games last year. They, you know, Herb Sendak has been a well-respected coach for many, many years around the country at different stops. And they're picked third or fourth, depending on what poll you look at, in a very good West Coast conference. Of course, it's led by St. Mary's with former Billiken assistant Randy Bennett and Gonzaga. They're kind of the bellwethers, but Santa Clara is good. You know, they got good size. They got a 7-footer and they got a 6'10". Both guys are starters, can play, and they got a guy that's a pro prospect, Adama Alfabo, a 6'7" forward, who kind of flirted with going pro last year, but he came back. So it's going to be a good test, and looking forward to the challenge.
Team picked up 2 wins during the exhibition portion of the season, as they were expected to do against Rockhurst and Maryville. No disrespect to those programs, but they are built in so for SLU to just get some work in. What did you take away, if anything, from those 2 exhibitions?
Well, the main thing is I believe we got Robbie Avila back healthy. You know, of course, during the preseason scrimmage, he injured his ankle and was out of action for several weeks. But he was able to come back for that last scrimmage, played 17 minutes, looked really good, got a good sweat going. And, of course, everybody knows he's one of the best big men in the country. So just the fact that I think he's going to be full go going into the regular season, that's big. I think it's going to be interesting because we got a lot of different options. Obviously, you look at Robbie, you look at Gibson, Jimerson as veterans, and Isaiah Swope. They're kind of the big three. And then you got about eight guys who are quality players who are really going to battle. I think one revelation was Kobe Johnson, the 6'4 guard out of West Virginia, a senior, really shot the ball well in the two preseason games. Of course, he was bought on maybe to be a defender, a veteran hand on the backcourt, but he really shot the ball very well from three-point range. And I think folks are going to be the other fifth starter is going to be Kalu Anya, a 6'8" transfer from Brown. Just plays with a lot of physicality and plays with a big motor around that basket. So I think it's a team that's going to be a lot of balance. You're going to shoot the ball from three quite a bit. And how we rebound and defend, that's going to tell a lot on how we do Monday and obviously throughout the rest of the season. Then there's a lot of other pretty good players to look at down the road.
Is it challenging that for Coach Church, just in the sense that he comes in, there's a handful of guys that stuck around from last year. He also brings in some players from Indiana State. So it's almost like kind of bringing in together two different groups plus the new players that you bring in. But that's a little bit of a unique situation, maybe not quite as unique now with the transfer portal, and players do follow coaches a little bit more often now than in the past. But historically speaking, you wouldn't have that where kind of two groups are being brought together to form one team.
Yeah, it's unique, but then like you said, it's what we are, not what it is right now. It's unique because he brings Isaiah and he brings Robbie with him from Indiana State. Not only are they great players, but they're veterans and they know his system, so they're kind of almost like assistant coaches on the floor. And then you got, it's like three different groups, as you said. Then you got the three holdovers, Gibson, Larry Hughes II, and Kellen Thames as well. And then everybody else, then you got a group of transfers or freshmen coming into the mix. So you're trying to, you know, intertwine all of these entities into a smooth unit. So it's going to be a work in progress throughout the preseason, non-conference, and going into the conference season as well. And like I say, it's a challenge that a lot of different coaches have around the country because of the portal. But it's a unique challenge, obviously, here. And it's got a lot of quality players. And you, if you want to get to a 7-8-9-man rotation, it's a challenge because you got a lot of different guys here who are capable of contributing on a nightly basis, which is a good thing.
Obviously, still early going, and you only show so much during exhibition play. And we'll find out a lot more as conference season, non-conference season moves along. But what did you think from a chemistry standpoint? Did it seem like guys were working together well?
It did. It took, like I said, starting with the second half of the Rockhurst game, and that's the game Robbie didn't play. It took a while, and you could see guys get in tune with each other. The passing was well. Then the second game, you saw crisp ball movement, and they just did a nice job making the extra pass. You saw a lot of hockey assists, guys moving without the basketball. I think that's going to be a big core to the offense, the spacing, the movement, the ability to just move the basketball. And I think having Robbie back for that game, that made it a lot easier as well. So I think, like you said, that's going to be a challenge. Now you're facing a high-level team from a conference. That's going to be a good test to see where we are at this point of the season.
In no way, shape, or form do I ask this next question trying to take a shot at Coach Ford. Great, good man, good coach. He did some really good things at SLU, and we wish him best of luck moving forward. But my question is, does what feels different, like from a culture standpoint, an environment standpoint, whatever it might be, what feels different moving from Coach Ford to Coach Schertz?
Well, every coach has its different styles of play and everything. I know Travis, when he was with Singlish, when we had our successful teams, we were built on toughness, rebounding, playing good defense, and, you know, I always said attack the rim, attack the paint. And we won a lot of games doing that, and it was a lot of fun doing that. While this was Coach Schertz, we got to play solid defense, but his style is more three-point shooting. You know, it's kind of more the analytics. You know, you're shooting the three, you're shooting, you're driving to the layup and getting to the free throw line or shooting the layup, not many mid-range shots in there. So that's kind of more what a lot of, Nate Oates at Alabama has done that, got them to a Final Four. You see a lot of coaches subscribe to that. So you see a lot of the pace and space type of thing. It's almost kind of like watching with Rick Majerus when he was here at St. Louis University. So it's kind of different styles, both great guys, great to work with, and we're very successful with what they've been able to do.
SLU opens up the season coming up Monday afternoon, 2 o'clock, the tip-off from Sioux Falls, South Dakota, as they take on Santa Clara. Our coverage with Bob Ramsey and Missouri Sports Hall of Famer Earl Austin Jr. is set to begin at about 1:45. Earl, great to talk to you. I'm sure we'll check in during the course of the season. Thank you for the time, and again, congratulations on the Hall of Fame induction. Very, very cool.
Thank you, Matt. I appreciate the time. Call anytime.
Awesome. That's Earl Austin Jr. joining us on the program. We appreciate him greatly. And, man, he is completely deserving of his honor going into the Missouri Sports Hall of Fame. We'll take a break, and when we return, we'll talk Mizzou football. They're not playing this weekend, but it's a big weekend for them to reset and see what they can accomplish. They've still got the opportunity to have a very special season, but some things have to go right. We'll talk with Eli Hoff from the Post-Dispatch and STL Today. We'll do that next. It's the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. It's Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. It's also an off weekend for Missouri football. They sit with a record of 6-2, which sounds great, but you're not going to find a lot of people out there that are overly positive about the program because of their two losses and the one-sided nature, including the latter last time out when they fell at Alabama 34-0. To talk through all things Tigers football, also talk a little Mizzou basketball with him, we welcome back onto the program our friend Eli Hoff. You read him in the Post-Dispatch, also at STL Today. He's on Twitter at @ElyHoff. Eli, thanks for taking some time. How are you?
Of course, I'm doing well. I think better than a lot of Mizzou fans are, so that's a good thing in my book. How are you doing tonight?
I am good. It's good to be able to chat with you, and the Tigers are kind of at a reset point here with the off weekend, and then they go into a stretch where they'll play Oklahoma, South Carolina, Mississippi State, and Arkansas. They have a chance to put together a 10-2 season if they beat all those teams, and all those teams are very beatable, but at the same time, if they put together efforts like they had against Alabama and Texas A&M, that's probably not happening. There's a lot of questions about this team. How do you kind of evaluate this team right now? A good record of 6-2, but a kind of a negative feeling about them.
Yeah, it's really been tough to reconcile just the on-paper talent of this team and what the expectations were and what the opportunity was, frankly, with the favorability of this schedule, with then what this team is actually shown in some of these games where they've been tested and needed to come out and show something better than they have, frankly. And I think it's that kind of disconnect that has a lot of people frustrated, because just everything we were talking about in July and August, even before that, and just building up hype for this season, so little of that has actually materialized. So, you know, it's a good time for a bye week, a chance to get Brady Cook, you know, get him time to heal up on multiple fronts, frankly, which is kind of crazy, and let this team figure out what these next four games are going to look like, because the four games at the end of the year that I think a lot of people thought would be four wins, now there's an argument to be made that, you know, there might only be one or two in that section. So it's definitely a reset happening as far as just the atmosphere around this team.
Is it a failure that they have not been able to get better quarterback play when Cook has not been available?
I've gone back and forth with that, to be honest with you, because you look around college football and some of the best teams are the teams that do have a backup option they can turn to at times. Like, you look at Texas A&M as the top of the SEC right now, and that's because they've had two different quarterbacks who can come in at different times. But at the same time, that feels sort of unfair to call a team a failure if they don't have a good backup quarterback. You look at who the backups are at schools like Georgia. Not a great option at backup. They'd be in a tough spot without a good backup option. Even a school like LSU, they have a transfer from Vanderbilt who wasn't the greatest. And the thing too, Drew Pine hasn't been good the last two games, but I think if you'd ask people in August, just based on his resume, is he a decent backup quarterback, to have a lot of people felt pretty comfortable there. And I think it's safe to say that Drew Pine is in general a better quarterback than he's shown, but he's shown what he's shown, and that's the body of evidence that's out there. So it's tough for me to call it a failure on anybody's part, but it's definitely been a shortcoming, and it's something that could prove really, really costly if Drew Pine has to play in these final four games in any capacity.
Yeah, that's my next question. Do you get any sense? I know they can kind of lock things down here on an off week and not a lot of information is going to get out, but do you get any sense on when, if the whatever the hell situation is for Brady Cook and how that might impact the team moving forward?
Yeah, well, first, you're right to say it's been locked down. I'd asked Eli Drinkwitz on an SEC teleconference that coaches have with media this week. I'd asked him two questions. I asked him first, does he expect Brady Cook to be back this season? And he said, yes, he does. He wasn't going to specify when, but he said at some point this season. And then I also asked him just, is it the ankle or this hand and wrist injury that popped up against A&M or against Alabama, excuse me, you know, which is it that's the priority? And he didn't want to answer that either. He said some nonsense about it, Brady's soul needing to be mended. So that's the direction he's wanted to go. He doesn't want the information out there. Yeah. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's a situation where I think there's a right now a non-zero chance that Brady Cook is missing time coming out of this bye week. You know, it's more likely he misses the Oklahoma game than the Arkansas game, right? Just in terms of the time it'll take, but we just don't know for certain. I think what's clear, though, is that during this bye week, Mizzou needs to be figuring out a way to be able to score points with Drew Pine on the field, because it seems like there's a strong chance they're going to need to be able to do that at some point in these last four games, and maybe to a significant degree. We just probably won't know.
Do you get the sense, and again, this is a hard question to ask on an off week, but do you get the sense that the negative talk about this team from people like us has infiltrated the team, whereas they are very aware now that going into the season with a top 10 ranking and all that, and college football playoff being talked about, that's really essentially off the table now. How do they go about making sure that the disappointment of what this season has turned into does not turn into more losses down the stretch?
I mean, that's the challenge, and that's where what this season has become in this bye week is something that is going to test this coaching staff on a lot of ways. One, like I just mentioned, you know, getting the offense to work with a backup quarterback, but it also tests the culture that Eli Drinkwitz has built and this whole something to prove mindset, this wilderness brotherhood, all of that. It's easy to do all of that when you're getting results on the field, when you can say, those things I talked about, we're doing them on the field and it's working and we're winning. That's easy to get guys to buy in. It's a lot harder when it's not working, when the things they've bought into are leading to getting smacked around at A&M, coming back and getting smacked around at Alabama. That's tough. When you see a guy like Brady Cook just getting hurt like this through no fault of his own and just, you know, not being able to be out there, that tests any team. And then when the external atmosphere around the team, when that sours, you know, these guys are all on social media. They're not immune to what is being said about this team, just like they weren't immune to all the excitement of the summer. It's the opposite side of the coin, but really the same core problem here. And it's going to be one heck of a test for what Eli Drinkwitz has built at Missouri.
We're talking with Eli Hoff from the Post-Dispatch and STL Today. Let's jump over to Mizzou basketball. They opened up the season on Monday. A good test to get the season started. They play at Memphis. What an interesting kind of place for this program to be in. 2 years ago, Dennis Gates' first season, they're incredible. Last year, their record is terrible. They recruited off that first season somehow, some way in today's era of college basketball. They're able to keep that recruiting class together coming into this year, even coming off a bad season last year. And now, for me, it's hard to assess what this team is even going to look like and how good they can be. What are you seeing here in the early going? They played one exhibition. They've been out on the practice floor.
Yeah, and even that exhibition, you know, they doubled up Lincoln, who's a Division II team. You know, I don't know how much you can realistically take away from a game like that. It's so tough to evaluate. 10 newcomers, 5 guys from the portal, 5 freshmen. You know, you can look at every stat that's out there. You could watch every bit of film that's out there on these guys. But you don't know what it's going to look like until they're actually on the floor together. I talked to some of the coaches back in the spring, and they were saying that you know, they feel good about this portal class, but they don't know until they get them in the gym and start trying things out. So that's what this non-conference schedule is built to be. It'll be a real test on the road against Memphis. That's a legit tough non-conference game that they're going to get a very early, very clear baseline. And then they're able to go kind of into the lab, to speak metaphorically, and have a lot of home non-conference games against small-scale opponents, a lot of, you know, bye games, and try things out, keep ramping it back up, and then start December with more big-time games, with Cal coming to town, Kansas, and then Bragging Rights versus Illinois, and test out what they've worked on. So I'm someone who I really like that approach from Dennis Gates as far as the scheduling this year. I think that's the right way to go about it. But, you know, it'll come down to how much talent there is that came in from the portal and what these freshmen can do and what the returners from last year can do. I think they all still have a pretty bitter taste in their mouths from that performance. So it should be a motivated group, that's for sure.
Last thing for you, and we could probably talk about this for over an hour and not get into all aspects of it, and I would encourage everybody to read your latest at stltoday.com and in the Post-Dispatch. Missouri announcing that they're fully going to be opting into revenue sharing. This is connected to the antitrust settlement in House versus the NCAA, a $2.8 billion settlement. And what this means is there's going to be millions of dollars that are going to be directly shared with athletes at Missouri. Now, the direct impact on fans is that ticket prices are going to be going up. But this is a big deal, and it impacts a lot of schools. Missouri is not alone, but this is a lot of money that's going to be coming out of the Missouri Athletic Department and headed to student-athletes.
Yeah, well, you're right to say we could talk about this for hours. I spent about half an hour with Laird Beach, the athletic director, yesterday in asking him questions about this, and we barely scratched the surface. Like you mentioned, I'd encourage people to go read the story we have out on it. We go into a lot of detail here, and it's a lot of good perspective from Laird. Kind of the basic gist is, you know, revenue sharing is going to be to college sports what NIL and the transfer portal has been. It's going to be transformational, and it's going to cost athletic departments at least another $22 million a year. That's how much they can give to athletes. And so Mizzou's seeing this as a time when they need to increase the amount of revenue that's coming in. And Mizzou sits 13th out of the 16 teams in the SEC in terms of revenue generation. They want to be more around the average. Be more around, you know, spot 8 or spot 9 in the SEC, which means they need to bring in about $35 million a year more in revenue. As Laird explained it yesterday, you know, in years past, Mizzou could say, well, let's fill the football stadium, and then that'll help us with revenue. They've been doing that, 12 straight sellouts. They're maxing out what they can get out of football revenue. So they see it as, all right, well, it's time to raise the prices. That's something that Laird was saying for season tickets they haven't done in about a dozen years. He thinks it's long overdue. There'll be some other more nuanced shifts in the fundraising model, but the bottom line here is you know, they feel like they need to be getting more revenue from the ticket sales front, from fans. They realize what they're asking. They're committing to trimming expenses too, but college sports, it's getting more and more expensive to compete year in, year out, especially in a league like the SEC. Missouri is where it wants to be as far as being in that conference, but now to compete in it, that price tag is going up. But again, there are a lot of nuances to it. I think Laird Beach has been good in explaining his logic. All that's out there on STL Today. He'll be communicating more as kind of the specific numbers come out, because it is a complex thing. Fans are going to feel an impact, but it's a big deal in the college sports universe.
Really, really big deal. And I think you did a great job putting it all together. Eli, we always appreciate your time. Enjoy a weekend without college football, but getting ready for college basketball, and enjoy these next this next month and a half as you've got both going on. Thanks for your time.
For sure. It's a busy month, but a fun one. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Eli Hoff joining us from the Post-Dispatch and STL Today. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Just a couple minutes left here in hour number one of the program. Wanted to talk about the Blues for just a moment or so. They lose to the Flyers yesterday in Philadelphia 2-1. After beating the Maple Leafs 5-1 to open up that four-game road trip, one-sided losses against the Canadiens and Senators before playing close last night against the Flyers. Blues coach Drew Bannister spoke with the media earlier today. Thought this was interesting. He obviously thought that his team played better yesterday. You lose 2-1 as opposed to 8-1 or 5-2. Yeah, they played better. And when talking today, talked a little bit about trying to get some momentum in these games, and that's seemingly not really happening.
I thought yesterday our guys stuck to the task, and you know, momentum-wise, it was the game itself was kind of swung in our favor for most of the game, if not all of it. But it's you know, the mistakes right now that are happening, they seem to be amplified right now, and you're kind of fighting an upward battle. But you know, for us, I liked our game yesterday. I thought our competitive level was much higher than it was in the previous two. I thought defensively we did a real good job, you know, and we made two mistakes and it ends up in the back of our net, and that's where we're at right now, you know, and we have to be able to fight through that and make sure those situations so they don't happen.
So do you stress that to the guys coming in today that that was a good blueprint yesterday, it's just the result wasn't what we were?
Yeah, I don't know. I think there's things in the game that maybe go unrecognized that we can be better at, that can really make us, you know, push to the next level and be a better hockey team as a group. And I think those are things that we look to point out more. You know, this morning at the end of the day, we lost a hockey game. We're not happy with the result. We had an opportunity to push that to overtime and probably get 2 points out of it. But we come back home with only 2 out of 8 points in the road.
I really appreciated Drew Bannister's second part of the answer there, second part of what he said there, because he spent a fair amount of time discussing the things that went well in yesterday's game. And not that you should run away from that just because you lost a game. There's nothing wrong with mentioning the good things that happened, especially when you were coming off back-to-back 5-2 and 8-1 losses. Clearly, the effort was better yesterday. But when asked to basically double down on that and say, well, then is the focus on, hey, this is the blueprint? No, of course it's not the blueprint. You lost the game. A loss should never be the blueprint of what you want to do moving forward. And credit to Drew Bannister for his answer in saying that at the end of the day, they still lost a hockey game. At the end of the day, there's still stuff they need to do better. I get a little concerned when it's this early on in the season and we're already doing the what went right in losses thing. That's something that I think you do in February when you're running out of gas. Not so much at this point, but I did appreciate Bannister's second part of the answer. They play Toronto at home tomorrow. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port and trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
We do continue on here on a Friday evening, taking you into your weekend. Still coming up this hour, Kevin Wheeler is going to join us in about 10 minutes or so. We'll get into the Cardinals' moves of the last 2 days. Our weekly conversation with Patrick Mahomes, courtesy of our sister station, 96.5 The Fan in Kansas City. And also a conversation with Rachel Zimmerman to preview tonight's Rachel Zimmerman show. That's all on the way this hour. Wanted to touch on a couple baseball things here in this first segment. First off, just this is going to be a weird offseason. I was actually thinking about this, and I like the direction the Cardinals are going, and I am appreciative of the fact that they are going to reset player development and trying to get themselves back to a point where they can more consistently be contending at a high level. That being said, what is a little bit of a bummer is seeing potential free agents and knowing, you know what, this is just the offseason. This is just the year where the Cardinals are not going to be involved in it. And a lot of the high-end guys, they probably weren't that involved with. Oh, Sonny Gray was a high-end guy, and they were involved with him. But just as I've seen news, it's kind of this empty feeling of, okay, the hot stove's going to look a little different, going to feel a little different this year with the way things are going on. But it could be an interesting offseason. Some of these teams that are already all in seem to be willing to go further all in. The Dodgers are going to spend more money. The Yankees are going to spend more money. I mean, the Mets, I think, have proven to themselves that they're ready to compete, so they're probably going to jump back in to the deep end of the financial side of things as well. And another name to add to that group is left-hander Blake Snell. He has exercised his right to opt out of his contract with the Giants to become a free agent for a second straight year. He had agreed in March to a $62 million two-year contract. That included $17 million signing bonus on January 15th, 2026, $15 million salary for 2024, $30 million salary for 2025, 15 of which would have been deferred, and now he has decided to opt out of that contract, and he's going to try to get more years, obviously. That's part of what Blake Snell is doing. While he opts out, one player with Cardinal connections who opts in, and I got to tell you, I love it. I love this so much. Jordan Montgomery has opted in not long after the chairman or the managing partner, the owner of the Diamondbacks, went out and just trashed them and said that basically put the lack of success of the Diamondbacks this year, placed it squarely on the feet of Jordan Montgomery, which was just wild. And a lot of people thought that he was attempting to get Montgomery to opt out of his deal, which that's not how you do it. If you're an agent for Jordan Montgomery, and he's changed agents since last year, he's not a Boris guy anymore. The moment you hear those comments, you're opting in. The moment Ken Kendrick said that he made a horrible decision, that was the quote, horrible decision to pursue Montgomery. The moment he says that, Montgomery has to opt in. And now I'm sure the Diamondbacks will attempt to trade him, because that's something that's hard to come back from. $22.5 million, nobody's going to take a $22.5 million contract off of the Diamondbacks' hands for Jordan Montgomery. So, look, maybe he does come back and they just go through a very awkward sort of thing when they pass each other in the proverbial halls. But if not, this ends up costing the Diamondbacks money because they trade him. Does somebody pick up 11 of it, 15 of it? Like, I don't know what the number is that you feel comfortable with on Jordan Montgomery, but it's certainly not $22.5 million. So after Kendrick made those comments about him, which he just should have never made, my hope at this point, this is kind of petty, on behalf of Jordan Montgomery, my hope is that they trade him. They trade him to a good team. That good team is unwilling to pick up much of his contract, so the Diamondbacks get to spend much of this next year paying him to play for another team, and I hope Montgomery does well. I would think he will do much better when he has a full spring training, unlike what happened this past year. All right, we'll take a break, and when we come back, our good friend Kevin Wheeler is going to join us. We'll talk through the Cardinals' moves the last couple days. That's next here on KMOX. It's Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX as we continue on with our Friday show. Matt Pauly with you, and joined right now by the former host of this program, now part of the Dave
Glover
Show. The lesser
former host.
No.
You're the man.
And also now part of the gang at the Gas House Gang, literally, which
we're
is starting
members.
On Monday. We are in the most non-serious way possible. We are indeed gang members. It is our good friend Kevin Wheeler. Hey, Wheels.
What's going on, buddy?
Not much. So let's start with this. Starting on Monday, we're going to be doing kind of what we've been doing on Mondays recently, but we're putting a name to it, and we're putting more days to it.
And we're doing it every day, yeah.
It's going to be myself, you, Bernie Miklas, Tom Ackerman. It's the Gas House Gang on all of our social media channels, live at noon as a video show, and then audio-wise available later on all podcast platforms, and then it'll air 8 o'clock at night here on KMOX, assuming that we don't have any games that evening. Monday will be all four of us. Tuesday through Friday will be some combination generally of two of us, and it's going to be a lot of fun.
And I think for the big news, we'll get all four of us together for those things too, right?
Yes, yeah.
Like if there's a big trade, I'm sure that we'll all assemble like the Avengers and come together to offer thoughts and takes.
We did that on that Tuesday, and it was great. It was fantastic. Yep. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And again, not to pat ourselves on the back, but to pat ourselves on the back. I think when you take the institutional knowledge and just the knowledge of the game of baseball of the four of us and the different places we have all been, it creates an environment for a very interesting baseball conversation.
Yeah, the way I'm putting it is this. We have so many great baseball people in this town. I don't want to claim that, like, we're the Mount Rushmore. That's not, no.
Right.
There's no such thing. There's too many good baseball people in St. Louis for that to be the case. But what I will say, and this is where I will pat us all four on the back, not just me, I don't think you'll find anywhere where you're going to have four at one time in one place that can bring more baseball knowledge to the table at that moment, mm-hmm. right? Like, again, I mean, there are a lot of great people out there, but Derek Gould's one of our favorites. He's not a part of the Gas House Gang unless we can arrange something later on, you know, player to be named later. But, like, he's amazing. That's not my point, is that we're not better than that. We're not better than Randy Carricker, who's one of the best baseball guys in town. It's just that you're not going to find four people in one place at one time, all at once, every single week, which will be Mondays for all four of us, compared to this. So
yep.
You want the real deal. That's what you're going to get, the real deal.
Every day, 12 noon, and hopefully people can. And if you're watching live, there is the ability to comment on what we're talking about.
Yep. So you can ask questions, whatever.
It's not overly interactive, but we do have the interactive ability.
As we go, you know, because we'll see, because we're still kind of putting it all together. Sure. It may end up being that we do more of that. It may be as simple as, hey, send us questions via Twitter. You know, send them at Matt Pauly. Well, I forget what the end of yours is because it just comes up on air.
Yeah.
And mine's just my name and a number.
Why do you have 94?
94 is the year I graduated college. Okay. When I set up an account, I had to come up with something because my damn name was taken.
I didn't think that Twitter was going to be a thing when it started, and I got that one wrong.
It's definitely, and you know what? Here's the thing. It's been several different things. Yeah. Now it's a whole different thing, but it's still useful to me as a tool for work.
I once had an interaction.
It's a little less fun than it used to be, but it's still useful.
I had an interaction with the person once who has the at Matt Pauly Twitter. I was trying to get it from him. He wasn't going to give it up. He's a guy in West Virginia.
Okay.
There's a lot of, when I lived in, this has not happened since I lived in Colorado. So I went Colorado, Wisconsin, and then here. When I lived in Colorado, I can't tell you how often people would hear my last name and go, are you related to the Paulies in West Virginia? It's like, no, that never happens here.
Really?
But in Colorado, at least once a month.
So maybe there's some connection there.
Yeah, I don't know. At least once a month, people would ask me, oh, are you part of the Pauly clan from West Virginia? Nope.
I don't know.
No, I'm not.
I get those every once in a while, but I get asked about them. Like, there's been a few different Wheelers that are broadcasters, Chris Wheeler and others that have done it. And I always get asked, I'm like, nope, none of them. I do wish that I was related to Zach Wheeler, because then I could hit him up for some money.
Yeah, that'd
be good. He's done pretty well for himself.
I'm not related to Jane Pauly either.
No?
No.
What about Pauly Shore?
No.
But wait, that's not how that works.
I used to have, and it's spelled different. He's Pauly, no E. I saw him once, though, at the Funny Bone at Westport years and years ago, and he sold T-shirts that said Pollywood. Of course, I had to buy one.
Yeah, you got
to
get one of those.
Yeah, so I had I don't know where it is now, but I had a Pollywood shirt.
Yep.
All right, so the Cardinals make a move today as they have claimed off of waivers. Rodri Munoz, he comes over from the Marlins. I mean, the tons of fastball velocity, not a whole lot of command, has had very little success in the big leagues. Even his AAA numbers this past year weren't
all
great.
His minor league numbers total are not good.
Yeah.
Like, he's a 5.01 ERA in the minor leagues. He was in the sixes in the major leagues last year in 17 starts, 18 appearances. And I think by a lot of measures was one of the worst pitchers in baseball last year. But I want to be clear about this. But he's always worked as a starter, including in the minor leagues. I think the only relief appearances he had were his first professional year. There's like 10 relief appearances. I think he's been almost entirely a starter throughout that time. Here's what he has. He throws 95. His average fastball last year was in the top third of Major League Baseball. So he's got a good fastball. Average 95 as a starter. You probably knock that up 97, 98 if he's working one inning at a time as a reliever. But he's got significant command problems, and he hasn't really honed in on an off-speed pitch that he can lock in and throw for strikes. He's got several. He throws a slider, he throws a cutter, he throws a change. None of them had any success last year, right? Like, none of them were any good. But what I would envision here is, number one, it's mostly just a depth move for Memphis, okay? This is a 24-year-old guy with physical ability. And it's probably a Memphis move. It's to have some bodies at Memphis, maybe a guy that you can bring up if you needed somebody for something. But I think it'd be an interesting project. Like, I personally, if I were running the team, would call Rodri and his agent today and say, listen, buddy, welcome to the Cardinals. You're now a reliever. We are going to see how you work in one and two inning stints. We're going to see if we can't simplify your repertoire a little bit, improve fastball command, maybe throw it a little harder because you only have to throw an inning at a time. And then we'll figure out, hopefully using some form of a pitching lab, which pitch works best with your fastball. I would love to see this guy, because I think the comp, I referenced this on Twitter earlier, I'd be curious to see what you think, Matt. I think the comp is something similar to what you did with Jojo Romero.
Yeah.
So Romero with Philadelphia was a failed starter. He was a guy that threw hard, had a good arm, had problems with command, and didn't seem to be in the plans for the Phillies. And they were going with veteran bullpen, right? They went out and got Gregory Soto, and they have Jose Alvarado. They had all kinds of guys. They had a veteran bullpen. And, you know, they obviously were like, we can afford to part with this guy. But the Cardinals took him, transitioned him to a different role, took him out of a starting role, made him a reliever, and all of a sudden you got a weapon. I don't want to say that I think Munoz can be at that level, but it can be a similar concept. And this is what you should be doing when you're in the position the Cardinals are in now. Young physical talent that you might be able to tweak and mold a little bit to get a useful piece out of.
To take that comp, though, I then remind fans, and I know you said it's a Memphis move. Don't forget, Romero got here. But even the next year, he was competing for a job, and he didn't win a job.
That's right.
He was back in Memphis in 2023.
He spent most of that year in Memphis. Yeah.
It wasn't until 2024 that he became...
That he opened with the team.
Yeah. End of 2023, he established himself. 2024, he established himself as a 162-game big league pitcher. So if that's the play, well, then just remember what... Everybody appreciates JoJo Romero and looks back at that move now
what
and says
move.
The Cardinals won that, but it took them a year and a half,
yes.
2 years for them to win it.
And that's not as big a problem now as it would have been in any of the recent offseasons, because in the recent offseasons, your goal was, what can we do to close the gap to win the division, make the playoffs, make a playoff run? This year, it's more of a, let's see what we can do. We need to cut back on payroll because of the TV thing. And I'm speaking as the team, not what you and I think. But their position is, of course, hey, listen, we're losing revenue, so we're going to be cutting back on this. And they are also desperately in need. Forget the money. They are desperately in need of resetting the way they do things, the way they think about the game, the way they develop players, the way that they can help a guy like Munoz or Romero adapt to a new role or make mechanical changes or do, you know, they need to reevaluate all of that and redo all that. And it just doesn't happen overnight. So this is kind of a, you know, do you play video games?
No, not really.
So if you guys out there that are gamers, you'll understand this. There are times where sometimes your game freezes. I think the Cardinals have frozen. And what you do in that case is you turn the power off, you unplug it for 10 seconds, you plug it back in and you reset.
Take the Nintendo cartridge out and you blow on it.
I think that's what the Cardinals need. They don't need a rebuild. They don't need to destroy everything, but they do need to go through that process of resetting things.
All right, so something that's not being talked about a lot that I do think is notable with this move and the moves that were made yesterday with Middleton, Lynn, and Gibson, and the Middleton actually move didn't actually impact the 40-man roster because he was on the 60-day, but the 40-man roster is now at 36.
Yeah.
This offseason, among others... Tink Hentz, TK Roby, Trent Baker, Alex Cornwell, Andre Granillo, Matt Swanson, players who the Cardinals would need to put onto the 40-man roster to protect without them being eligible to be picked up by another team. So it's at 36 right now.
Is that after like Goldschmidt and all that too?
Yeah.
Okay.
The deadline to add Rule 5 eligible players to the 40-man roster, November 19th. That's not that far out. So... there's some pressure on the Cardinals if they say want to remove some players from the big league roster in order to protect more Rule 5 eligible players, whether that is Arenado, Michaelis, Mats, Contreras, Gray, whoever. Well, that November 19th deadline is there. I don't think many of those moves would be made before November 19th, but it is a date to remember.
Not the big ones, right? I mean, you're not going to be able to pull, I wouldn't think, like an Arenado deal or a Sonny Gray thing or anything like that by then. So you're probably looking more at the back end of the 40-man roster. And, you know.
But if Michaelis and Mats are not in your plans at all, it would behoove you to not have them on the roster on November 19th.
Well, the problem, though, is I agree.
Yeah.
But the problem is, I'm sure they're going to want at least some salary relief to move on from those guys. And I don't see that happening that fast because other teams are going to be like, well, we need to see what we can get in free agency, or we need to see if we can get somebody better than Miles Michaelis as opposed to doing it. But if you're looking up and down, you know, there are guys like, I'm not saying any of these guys should go. I'm just saying there are guys, these are the guys you could go with Ryan Ludos. There are guys like that can be removed from the 40 man that are not really going to, I mean, like, I don't know that Riley O'Brien is locked in. given the injuries and the inconsistency, although you want to, that's the kind of guy you probably want to keep around because of the stuff. But, you know, there are a few others. Jose Fermin could come off.
Yeah.
You know, players, like, even if he got claimed, you have replacements for a guy like that. So they're not a ton, and it would mostly be pitching that you would need to consider moving people off that 40-man. But I think there's enough wiggle room there where you can keep the guys you need to of that group. Because you're not exposing tin cans. That's a given.
Right.
Right. And how many guys did you just list there that need protection?
This isn't everybody, but it's the notable ones.
The notable ones.
Hints for me is an easy yes.
Yeah, yep.
TK Roby is an easy yes.
I think so, because you traded for him and he's got stuff.
Yeah. After that, the other notable names on there, Trent Baker, yeah. Alex Cornwell, Andre Grenier, Matt Swanson.
Yeah. The one of those that appeals to me is probably Swanson.
Okay.
He had a really good year, and he's a big guy, throws a hard sinker. You could easily see him profiling as a big part of your pen, even this year. Not big part, but a part this year and a bigger part down the road. But even him, like, none of those guys are quote-unquote top prospects.
Right.
So you might take the risk because you can get similar guys in the Rule 5.
Yeah, there will be many guys just like that who
yes.
are and I would they were active in the Rule 5 last year. It obviously really, really mm-hmm. worked out for them with Ryan Fernandez.
Right.
If you go find another Ryan Fernandez in the Rule 5 draft, you have done your job.
Yeah.
And I would believe that Heim Bloom had a lot to do with Ryan Fernandez
sure.
being
the Boston background. Yeah.
Yeah. So let Heim oversee that Rule 5 process.
And then keep in mind, by doing it that way, if you expose some of those guys that are comparable to other people that will be available in the Rule 5, by the Rule 5 draft at the end of the winter meetings,
yeah.
you may have moved some of those other guys and created a roster spot that at the moment doesn't necessarily exist.
Exactly. Last thing for you, just I was not at all surprised by the three guys not having their options picked up. There seemed to be like some... The news cycle started to shift towards, hey, maybe the Cardinals are going to bring back Kyle Gibson. I never, ever bought that. I always thought that they were going to move on from him. Look, if he doesn't get an offer that he likes and they come and they at some point say, you know what, it'd be nice to have a veteran guy in the rotation. Let's say they trade a Gray, they trade a Fetty, they move on from Michaelis, and Gibson is still out there. Maybe there's a conversation to be had at some point, but to me, those moves were easy moves to make.
I agree. And again, just to make this point, there will be similar guys to Gibson in free agency that are not Kyle Gibson, right? He had a better year this year than he did the year before. And you don't need someone like the way that I look at this is to me, I agree with you, by the way. I never thought they were going to pick up the option because they're trying to save payroll money, right? Well, you might be able to save on Michaelis and you might be able to save on Mats, but you don't know that right now. So if you pick up Gibson, there's a chance you're stuck with all of them.
Right.
And you don't have room for all of them.
No.
Because you mentioned Sonny Gray and Eric Fetty, and then you got Steven Matz and Andre Pallante and Michael McGreevy and Gordon Grisepo. Like, you got a lot of people you want to get a look at as rotation pieces. You can assess that later. So if you do trade Fetty or you do trade Sonny, you can now go back to Kyle Gibson or a similar guy and say, I mean, God, there's some other interesting guys out there for this kind of thing, too. What about John Means is a bad example because he just had his second Tommy John in June. So, but a player that's a free agent that's looking for a pillow deal where, like, as an example, would be what Detroit did with Jack Flaherty.
Right.
You can look for a guy like that on a one-year deal at $14 million later on and, you know, maybe find yourself a tradable piece or a guy you end up wanting to keep. But you don't have to do that now. And by doing it now, you're really tying yourself up.
The Pittsburgh Pirates are really good at signing those guys and then trading them at the deadline.
Yeah, except they didn't trade Aroldis Chapman.
No.
That was weird. But, I mean, like, that's the kind of free agent we are going to be thinking about.
Right.
If they're looking at free agents, it's going to be guys looking for bounce-back years where you're going to get a one-year deal and you can say, man, worst case, maybe this guy bounces back and we trade him. Or if it's a fit and it's good, maybe we try to negotiate something beyond that. And there are a few guys out there that have been good in the past that are either coming off bad years or coming off injuries that could fit that kind of pillow deal type structure.
It's going to be a lot more conversations like this starting on Monday with the Gas House Gang, 12 noon, Monday through Friday on all the KMOX Sports social channels. You can watch it, then you can listen back to it in podcast form where you get your podcast, and you can listen
anywhere
back to
it. Anywhere you get your podcast.
Yes. And 8 o'clock after Sports Open Line, we'll air it a replay. So
it's everything you want it to be.
It is.
It's a live TV show. It's an on-demand TV show. It's a live radio show. It's a podcast.
It's everything.
It's everything.
We just check off all the boxes.
All in one place.
Wheels, have a good weekend.
All right, buddy, you too.
That's Kevin Wheeler. I'm Matt Pauly. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.
Welcome back in. It's the Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauley. It is that time of the week where we listen in to a conversation with Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes. He has it each week with our sister station, 96.5 The Fan in Kansas City. Of course, here at KMOX, we are your home for Chiefs football in St. Louis. And as the conversation between Carrington Harrison and Patrick Mahomes began earlier this week, Mahomes had his annual gala to go along with his foundation, the 15 and the Mahomes Foundation. They do a lot of work dedicated to improving the lives of children. The foundation supports initiatives that focus on health, wellness, communities in need of resources, and other charitable causes. It's an organization that has been around since 2019 and has really done a lot of amazing things. And as Mahomes started his conversation, talked a little bit about the event that he held earlier in the week.
It went great, man. It's always great to see all the support that that we have in the community here for Kansas City, and it was the biggest one we've had yet, and it just keeps getting bigger, and it really is truly remarkable to see that everybody wants to come out and support not only me but the community and everybody that I work with. So it was a lot of fun.
We obviously know a lot of your on the field goals. What is a charity goal that you have? I got a chance to go to Indianapolis, and Peyton Manning has a children's hospital in Indianapolis. You have the ability to do very similar things here in Kansas City. What are some charity goals that you have?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I have like an ultimate goal of where I want it to end up at. I just want to keep growing it and just keep impacting kids from underserved communities and kids that just want to follow their dreams. And if I can keep doing that, then I think I will be happy with whatever the end goal ends up becoming.
You've built the park that's pretty close to the plaza. Now that Sterling and your little ones are getting old enough, have you had a chance to take them down there so they could play at the park?
Yeah, they've been able to play at the park. They enjoyed it. The hope is that I can keep doing stuff like that throughout the community. I mean, not only parks, but I've partnered with the Boys and Girls Club now, and we're going to try to help upgrade and keep those facilities at top-tier stuff. And so as long as we can keep improving stuff for kids to have the ability to go out there and follow their dreams and have fun and meet people and have new friends, I think that would be really cool to do.
You mentioned it a little bit about the growth you've seen in your charity over the years. How cool is it to see that community buy in? It's not just your teammates. It's the community that has really come out to support your charity as well.
Yeah, it's really cool. I mean, that's the special thing about Kansas City is people care about each other and they want to improve everyone's lives. And so I think I went from like 407 people last year to almost 900 people this year. And so it just shows that this thing is growing, and it's not about just me. It's about the city of Kansas City and how special a place it is.
Right now we're talking to Patrick Mahomes here for a few minutes. You mentioned growth. We have seen Chiefs fans go to opposing venues and sort of take it over. I don't think we've seen anything like we just saw on Sunday. It felt like a college coming to take over another team's home venue. It looked like it was 70-30, maybe 80-20 inside Allegiant Stadium on Sunday.
No, it was really cool to see. I mean, all that red in the away stadium. I mean, the Chiefs fans always travel well, but I think it was even more this last week. And so hopefully we can keep doing that. Obviously, we got the next two games at home. But as we keep traveling to other away stadiums, I hope the Chiefs Kingdom keeps traveling like that, because it definitely gives us an advantage.
A lot of people want your thoughts, I guess, on the trade of DeAndre Hopkins. It happened right after the last time that you and I got to speak. How rewarding is it? How exciting is it that you guys finally got him? You guys have kind of flirted with DeAndre Hopkins. You brought him in for a visit a couple years ago, and this time the deal came together.
Yeah, no, it's really cool. I mean, obviously a great football player, but I've built a great relationship with him, and he sees the football game. He sees the game of football a lot like I do, and you saw that in the little bit of opportunities that he got throughout the game this last game. And so I think as we continue to get him more and more involved in the offense, you're going to see how special of a football player he is. And he wants to. He came here to win, and hopefully we can continue to do that. And he definitely has a good knack for getting open, which is going to help everybody on the football team.
You've communicated the respect that you have for him. How great is it that this is a guy that has never played with you before? I'm not sure what run-ins you guys had before him joining the team, but you can hear it in his voice that he has a great respect for you and what you guys as a team have been able to accomplish over the last few years.
Yeah, I mean, he's a great football player, and I think when you get guys that have played a lot of great football in their career, they want to continue to go for that next challenge, and for him it's to win the Super Bowl, and that's everybody's goal at the end of the day whenever you play the game of football. And so I think he's excited to be here. I think if you watch the tape, he got open a lot this last week. I think seeing that on tape is going to give me the confidence to give him more and more opportunities to go out there and make plays.
A lot of conversation has been made about Andy's offense and how difficult it is to kind of learn on the fly. How difficult do you think it will be to kind of get him adjusted and get him acclimated into the offense in the middle of the season?
If it's anything like last week, I think it's gonna be easy for him. I mean, he's a very smart guy. He has a good understanding. He's played in multiple different offenses with multiple different quarterbacks, so he has a good understanding of how to just get himself open and be in the right spot. And I mean, we actually, I think last week we were even surprised by how fast he was picking up stuff. And so with a whole other week and an extra day, I think he's gonna be fine to go out there and get a full amount of work in order to be a big part of this offense.
Patrick, certainly correct me if I'm wrong, but I just can't think of you guys having too many receivers like DeAndre Hopkins, a little bit bigger, more of a contested catch guy. Normally you guys like the, 6'1", wiry, kind of speedy guys, and that's not what he is. Is this a different receiver than you're kind of accustomed throwing to, or is there a comparison that you have?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a different receiver. I mean, he's kind of a one-of-one receiver when it comes to being able to catch the jump ball, being able to get himself open in space. Be able to be one-on-one coverage. I mean, he's there's a reason that he's got all those all pros, and he's always been a great receiver. But I mean, he has a little bit of this kind of a mixture of a lot of guys that we have. I mean, Sammy Watkins, Juju. He's got the ability to win one-on-one like some other receivers that we had. I mean, it's hard to describe one guy because he's one of those type of receivers that only comes around once in a generation.
I saw that some of the other receivers were calling a monk. I'm curious, how many more years in the league do you think it's going to be before there's going to be some young receiver that the Chiefs get and they're going to start calling you unk?
It's not going to be many more. I mean, I'm still not very old. I mean, I'm only 29, but this is my eighth year in the NFL. So, I mean, a lot of these guys were in middle school or even low high school whenever I got in the NFL. So they've been seeing me play for a long time. So as the years go on here soon, they're going to be calling me out for sure.
Last couple questions here, Patrick, and I appreciate your time. I'm actually curious to get your opinion on this. You are somebody who your opinion, your voice matters. As you've sort of matured in your career, how do you make the determination of things that you want to speak up on?
I think it's just stuff that I feel like at that moment in time is something that I believe I need to speak up and use my platform. But, I mean, it's such a hard thing to decide and make those choices because it's not going to only impact you but your family as well and everyone that's around you. So you have to kind of weigh all those decisions and then decide if it's the right time to make your voice known.
You obviously know the climate that we're in, and athletes are speaking up just almost every day. Do you ever feel a pressure to speak up? Do you ever feel like an outside force that people are sort of looking for you to give your thoughts?
I don't know if it's necessarily a pressure. I mean, I understand the platform that I have, and I understand if I wanted to or not, what I say is gonna kind of be out there for everyone to see, and it could impact other people and how they think. But I think my goal is just to try to be the best person that I can be at the end of the day. And even though it might not be 100% with everybody and what they agree, I'm going to try to do whatever I can to make a positive impact in the world at the end of the day.
That is Patrick Mahomes joining us on the show today as we get you ready for Monday Night Football. Patrick, man, great stuff, man. I appreciate you.
Yeah, appreciate you, man.
That's Patrick Mahomes talking with our colleague in Kansas City at 96.5 The Fan, Carrington Harrison, the weekly conversation they have. Chiefs play a Monday night football game, as alluded to just a moment ago, put their undefeated 7-0 record on the line as they match up against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. 7:15 kickoff coming up on Monday, and our coverage is going to begin at 6 o'clock. So we won't have a Graybar Sports Open Line for you on Monday. Actually, after today, we're not going to have a show again until Wednesday, because Monday we'll have Chiefs Monday Night Football, and then Tuesday is election night, and we'll have coverage of that throughout the evening. So we'll have our next program coming up on Wednesday. Four straight days without a Sports Open Line. I don't know if I can deal with that, but I will, and we're going to have great stuff for you here on KMOX. All right, we're going to take a break, and speaking of great stuff, our good friend Rachel Zimmerman, she is going to join us coming up in just a moment to preview the Rachel Zimmerman Show, and we'll wrap up this edition of A Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Back at it, it's the Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. We are starting to wrap things up a little bit more from an hour from now. It is the Rachel Zimmerman Show. We always enjoy it when Rachel finds a little time to make her way into the studio before her show gets going in about an hour. She's with us right now. Hey, Rachel.
Hey, Matt.
How was your Halloween?
It was nice. It was very low key. You know, we celebrate pretty big on the Dave Glover Show with our programming. Yeah. But last night I just kind of chilled at home. It was really nice.
Do you have fun with what you guys did on, like, just kind of the creepy nature of the stuff you guys do during the week?
Yeah, it's definitely like a highlight of the year. But it is a lot of stress too. So it's always like, whew, whenever it's over. Now we just get to focus on the election. Sorry to bring it up. But yeah.
next Tuesday, well, hopefully it'll be over pretty soon after Tuesday. You've got a niece, correct?
I do. I have three nieces.
Do you ever do Halloween with them?
Yeah. A couple years ago, I went up when they were trick-or-treating, and I was like, you know, the fifth wheel at that point. But it was so fun. Like, it was so much just joy seeing them go from house to house. And I mean, what's better than that? I'm sure you experienced that with your daughters.
Yeah. So I grew up in a pretty religious household.
Same. I didn't trick-or-treat.
Neither did I.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So literally... Like a couple years ago when I lived in an apartment, not in St. Louis, like the apartment complex did like a trick-or-treat thing, but it was just a couple buildings. Like, last night was the first time in my life, because we took my daughter over to one of her friend's house that's also a friend of the family, and they did like the whole neighborhood, house by house by house. And I realized it as I was walking and watching her. That was the first time in my life where I had like experienced the true trick-or-treating.
Well, congratulations. Was it fun?
Yeah. So I got a couple stories. First, have you heard about the potato thing?
No.
Okay. So there's this thing where... It was almost like a social experiment where it's like, do you want candy or do you want a potato? And the people that I was with, we were actually talking about it before, and like, oh, I wonder if anybody's going to have the potato. One house had the potato where you could choose. My daughter was one of like six or seven kids in a group. My five-year-old daughter was the one daughter who chose the potato.
I'll take the potato
over
here.
So that's tonight my wife is going to make it for her.
That's adorable.
Yeah. So my daughter chose the potato over chocolate. That's the first thing. If people have no clue what I'm talking about, go Google trick-or-treating potato and you can find all the details on it. It's a thing. And then we weren't home, so we left the bucket, you know, of candy on our front porch. And I went back and I went, you know, we have like a Ring camera on our front door. So I went back to see the kids, you know, picking up the candy, because almost all of it was gone. I wanted to see how many kids actually came through. And towards the end of the night, a kid steps up to the bowl, picks up like everything in there, looks up, says, oh, they have a Ring camera, and drops the candy.
Wow.
And just takes a couple pieces and goes.
Wow.
Yeah. So the Ring camera saving candy for other people.
Yeah, he didn't want to get posted online.
Which I would never post a picture of like somebody else's kid, but that's one that I like. It was so funny. Like, I wanted to share that, but obviously I'm not going to do that because it's not my place to do
that. That's awesome.
All right. So Rachel Zimmerman Show tonight, 9 o'clock. What do you have going on?
I have a very exciting show tonight. I have Naresh Kumar. He's an amazing person. He biked from India to Germany on a tandem bicycle. So he had strangers hop on the back of his bike, and the whole thing was to raise awareness for human trafficking. Hmm. He has an incredible story. So he's my first guest. My second guest is actually a dream guest of mine, and that's Mr. Andy Cohen of Bravo fame.
Yeah.
And he's St. Louis's own. I got to talk to him. I went to the Lucas Kuntz rally a couple weeks ago specifically to talk to Andy and talk to him for about 6 minutes. So he's at the end of the show tonight. That was like a bucket list, like ultimate type of guest I could get on my show. So I'm very, very happy about it.
That is really cool. I've always hoped. So my wife loves Andy Cohen.
Oh, awesome.
And loves all the housewife shows and the Below Decks
good,
and the
good.
What is
Vanderpump
it?
Vanderpump Rules.
She doesn't
Southern
watch
Charm,
that one.
Summer House?
I don't know.
Okay. give me your number. We'll talk.
Andy does. Is it What Happens?
What Happens Live.
Okay. So, and she likes that. My hope, because Andy pops in every once in a while, and I know, like, when the Cardinals are good, he's around, I think, a lot more. I've always hoped that, like, we've got that booth downstairs, and people make their way in. I would love, at some point, for him to be in St. Louis, for me to meet him, and for me to be able to, like, FaceTime my wife unexpectedly with Andy Cohen. And I feel like, at some point in time, his and mine's paths are going to cross.
It's
going to
happen.
We just need the Cardinals to be better.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I will say, he lived up to expectations. I'm always nervous when I meet famous people. It's like, oh, I hope they're as nice as, you know, you want them to be. He was so incredible. I was so happy with our interaction. So he's a really nice guy.
Not to completely overshadow your first guest, but I mean, it is so much more common than I think people realize.
Absolutely.
And it is so scary. Like, as a parent of a 5-year-old girl, I think about my growing up and just going outside and playing and being away. I don't know how I'm going to parent that, because I am so afraid of the stuff, the evil stuff that happens in our world.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. And the thing I talk about with Naresh is just keeping your eyes out. And if you ever notice anything that seems suspect, always, always say something, because you could save a life.
Rachel Zimmerman Show coming up this evening, 9 o'clock. Do you have any other replays over the weekend?
I think I'm on at 7 o'clock on Saturday, too, if you want to catch it then.
And then podcast available?
It's up now.
Okay, very good. That's Rachel Zimmerman. Rachel, thanks for stopping in.
Thanks, Matt.
That's Rachel Zimmerman. I'm Matt Pauly. This has been a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.